Welcome to the healing power of your dreams on UK Health Radio with your dream divas, Teresa Chung
and Kelly Sullivan Walden. Each week, along with our recurring dream guest presenters and special guests, we'll explore the healing potential of your intuition by day and your dreams by night.
So join us
live each week
and let's discover the unexpected together.
Deep in your
time travel had a soundtrack, that would probably be it. But what if I told you that you don't need a DeLorean to travel through time?
I was lost in time, Teresa.
Of course.
I am so overwhelmed with joy because every single night, as you were saying, when you close your eyes and enter the dreaming world, you're already time traveling. You're already doing it.
Of course you are. In dreams, you're no longer bound by clocks, calendars, or logic. You can revisit the past, rehearse your future, and even step into moments that haven't happened, at least not yet.
Exactly. Dreaming is the ultimate time machine, one powered not by plutonium, but by consciousness itself. And the more we understand it, the more we realize just how extraordinary our inner worlds are. Welcome, everyone, to the Healing Power of Your Dreams here on UK Health Radio, where we explore how your dreams can guide, heal, and even transform your waking life.
And today's show is especially exciting because we're welcoming back our very first returning special guest by popular demand. She first joined us when the show was very young and when it launched back in October. And now, with nearly 70,000 of you tuning in each week, we couldn't think of a better time to bring her back or a more mind-opening guest to recur like a dream.
She's a neuroscientist, a visionary thinker, author, and a true pioneer at the cutting edge of consciousness research.
A fellow of the Institute of Noetic Sciences, science director for the telepathy tapes, and a leading voice in presentiment research, exploring how the body can respond to the future before it happens.
She's also credited in Dan Brown's latest novel, The Secret of Secrets, which I loved. And she is beloved. She was, a beloved guest on Dr. Mayim Bialik's YouTube show many times, multiple times.
She's also, and I have to pinch myself every time I revisit this past version of myself, but she was my co-author in 2017 for our book, The Premonition Code, very quirky book about mental time travel. But she's also recently published a brilliant read. I hope you can see it if I'm holding it up, if you're watching the clips. Have a Nice Disclosure.
Oh, it's so good. And I loved the premonition quote. And this book, Have a Nice Disclosure, is one of the most fascinating and inspiring books. And Julia is one of the most fascinating and inspiring human beings you could ever hope to talk to. I'm so excited.
So after that lengthy introduction, Julia, hello, welcome back.
Wow. It's delightful to be back, but also a little scary after that.
I'm going to make it scarier now because we have a
potential pressure.
Someone dropping in a few minutes before the close of the show who'd very much like to say hi to you. I wonder if your future self can precog that. Don't say anything. But just
I
let
will,
it
sure.
marinate. And when that person comes on, it'll be interesting to see if you sensed ahead of time that they were going to be here. I hope, because obviously getting people together is quite hard, but their intention is to be here. So let's see what happens. Now, Julia, your groundbreaking work in presentiment suggests the body can potentially respond to future events. And how do dreams fit into this? Are they a training ground for our ability to sense what's coming? And if dreams exist outside of linear time, could they actually help us change the future rather than just predict it? And if so, how can listeners begin to start understanding all of that?
I don't know. I know none of those answers. Let me see what's useful that I could say about that. I mean, I like the idea of dreams as a training ground for intuition and for connecting with your future self. I think that's really real. That feels like it might be real. That's really hard to prove scientifically, but I'll just speak from my sort of aesthetic, scientific sense that that seems is possible. There's a wonderful book called Precognitive Dream Work and the Long Self by Eric Wargo.
Eric Wargo, yes.
And
Wow.
and he speaks to this idea of all creativity kind of, well, then he also has another book called From Nowhere. Which, so I'm mixing up the two books. But anyway, he generally has this idea that creativity comes from the future, all of it. Like, so you're in this relationship with your future self all the time, whether you know it or not. And I think that's the key idea here. And that we wrote about that in the Premonition Code. It's not just Eric, but I got to it that way. But it's this idea that you're always, whether you're conscious of it or not, in relationship to your future self. So, given that you're always in relationship to your future self, what is the quality of that relationship? And it feels to me that dreams can be used to improve the quality of that relationship. If you want to start attending to that relationship, you'll find that it's a powerful sort of practice to spend a couple minutes a day after you wake up writing about how your dreams might have been a message from your future. Sort of just ask yourself the question, what if this dream was a message from my future self? What was it trying to tell me? Like, assume every dream is a message from your future self. What is it trying to tell
Wow.
you? Instead of vice versa, instead of looking at the dream and saying, prove to me that you're a message. So it's sort of like, what can you get from that relationship? And you're in control of that relationship. It's just how you look at a dream. It's how you interpret a dream. You don't have to look outside yourself for that or for any proof of that. And it makes it under your own control and maybe a little bit more gentle for people and also maybe more revolutionary for other people, depending on where you are in your life, in terms of developing these capacities. That's sort of my sense about how to answer that.
Fascinating.
Julia, I've
Kelly, over
got,
to you, because I know so many people who want to ask Julia questions. So before we bring in our guest presenters, Kelly, over to you.
I'm bursting. One of the things, and there's so many things that are fascinating to me about your work. So as a dream therapist, I'm always looking for a different way to look at dreams and a different way to look at things. Like, what's the silver bullet that gets people from feeling horrible about themselves into feeling like having that profound shift in consciousness? And you and I both have one thing in common, this time machine thing. Years ago, I started this thing called the Dream Project, working with kids in the inner city. And I brought in panels from the time machine that was used in the movie Back to the Future. And no, not Back to the Future, the one with the Terminator 2, and had the kids play with it and imagine going into the future and seeing themselves 10 years from now and what kind of wisdom they would have. And these inner city kids that didn't give a hoot about school, suddenly it was off the charts how empowered they felt. So can you talk about, as you're sitting here, not everybody's going to be able to see you, but you're in a rocking chair as we're speaking. Can you talk to us about this time travel experience you had yourself in the loop with your past and future self connecting?
Yeah, I have it all the time, but there was a particular profound case of it that was very healing for me that I think got me on this path of thinking about unconditional love and how it flows through time and how it heals, and thinking about and part of why I created Applied Love Labs, which is a nonprofit that used to be called TILT, the Institute for Love and Time. And by the way, if you look that up, we're working on our website, so it's at applied.love, and within a week you'll be able to see the website, and right now you can't. But the experience was this. I was as a kid, I was in this family that was very eccentric, which you might guess, and messed up in certain ways and not messed up in other ways. So one way that they were not messed up is that I constantly had this experience of being loved. And one way that they were messed up was my mom was kind of a rageaholic and my dad was abusive. And it sounds weird to say that because even when the rage and the abuse was happening, I still felt loved. So it's almost like there was this energy or feeling that I could connect to, but their behavior was not helpful, right? And hard and traumatic. So every night my dad would do some abusive thing that I don't want to talk about right now. And the way I got through it was in my mind's eye, I imagined this woman in her 40s or 50s in this rocking chair. And she had brown hair and she would just rock. And she would say to me, like, really encouraging things like, you can be angry. That's reasonable. Or like, you're gonna be okay, even though this is horrible right now. And actually, someday you're gonna thrive. And she would say, it's okay if you want to kick your dad. And these things were really helpful. They were kind of what a very skilled therapist might say if they were doing some kind of regression therapy, But like, so then, as I grew up and I went into therapy to try to deal with this situation and all those feelings and that trauma, I went to this therapist who said, "We're going to do this experiment. I'm going to take you sort of back in time, and I want you to just go be in the room with yourself when you're going through this at night and sit with that girl." And I put myself in a rocking chair, and that's when I realized that was me. And it was very healing. And then after that, I doubted whether I originally had the experience of the rocking chair woman when I was a kid, or whether it was something that I made up because I did this regression therapy. And then I realized I did not care whether what was really true. And that's the place I keep getting to. And that's part of actually why I wrote Have a Nice Disclosure. It's the place I keep getting to where you don't have to prove that something is quote unquote real for it to be effective. And if you get hung up on whether it's real, you might miss the healing part of it, right? Which is why I encourage people don't spend a lot of time trying to figure out if your dream is real. Find out how it's a healer. How is it going to be a healer? That's really the hidden nugget. Everything else is a distraction.
How
So that's what I'm thinking.
powerful, Julia. Thank you. And I'm now going to bring in the first of our four guest presenters. And not surprisingly, Julia, knowing that you were here, all of them made it a priority. You've got all four of our dream team here.
Thank
And
you.
I was going to play the Fantastic Four theme, but there's no time because I can watching the clock. And I'm going to bring in our very first guest presenter, Dr. Amy Robbins, who's a clinical psychologist and host of the hugely popular podcast Life, Death, and the Space Between. And I know Amy has a question or two to ask you, Julia.
Great. Hi, Amy.
Hi, Julia, or 25 questions that I have to ask for you, but I have to limit it today. So what I'm dying to know about right now is your current research. And I think being in the field of psychology, one of the words, the buzzwords that is big right now is neurodivergence. And I know you're doing work with the telepathy tapes and non-speaking autistics. And I'm just so curious, because I've been thinking about a lot about how this applies in my own life with my own kids, how we all think differently. How are you sort of seeing what is considered neurotypical versus neurodivergent? How much of it, you know, you talked about your own trauma comes out of trauma. What are we born with? Like, again, I could have 25 questions, but I'll sort of limit it to that space right now, because I'm just, you know, curious how we're defining these terms for people.
Yeah, I really kind of don't like the idea of neurotypical, because you can't actually point to some, like, a particular person's brain that is neurotypical. There literally is no neurotypical person. There's so much divergence. So we are all neurodivergent.
I don't even understand that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So in my view, we are all neurodivergent because there is no, or neurodiverse because there is no central, like, this is your right way for your brain to be. However, if you say that too strongly, then people think you're saying, therefore, people who have special struggles and disabilities don't need any help. And that's not what I'm saying. And so it's like, it's tricky to balance those perceptions, right? What I'm seeing in my work as I work with non-speaking autistic people, and I always work with non-speaking autistic people with someone who knows what they're doing. So, like, I'm coming at it from a research psychologist standpoint, but I work with people who are, like, speech and language pathologists or actual communication partners for non-speaking autistic people. And so that is the reason I'm saying that out loud, is because it's really important for those families to know that they should be working with people who know what they're doing with their kids, and always with them in the room or with someone that they trust. So what I'm finding is that what I think is true, what I'm noticing is that there's different kinds of autism. This is such an obvious statement. But anyway, there's different kinds of autism. And people who cannot speak have this, what I would call right hemisphere dominance. And we don't acknowledge the power of the right hemisphere generally in Western culture. We sort of play it down. Right hemisphere is intuition, music, emotion, understanding relationship in a deep level. These kind of things are considered sort of like, in a way, what women do. I mean, sort of like they're sort of not valued. And then there's people who are left hemisphere dominant. And there are some people with autism who are very left hemisphere dominant that have trouble with social relationships and are really good at math and analysis, et cetera. And what I'm seeing is that these non-speakers, I would call them very different from that. Their gifts are in the right hemisphere, which include intuition, psychic capacity. As far as I can tell, they're incredibly telepathic. And we can learn a lot from how they understand human relationships in a profound way. So that's what I'm noticing.
Thank you so much for that. I hate to interrupt this flow, but I want everyone to hold on to their neurodivergent and time-traveling dream. We'll see you on the other side. We'll be right back.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
What if your healing journey could feel empowering, hopeful, even transformative? Welcome to the Alkaline Collective Mastermind, a community for anyone facing cancer, staying cancer-free, or committed to prevention. No matter your stage, whether you've chosen conventional care, an integrative path, or a fully holistic approach, here, you're not alone. Here, your healing journey becomes a journey of empowerment. We explore the science of oxygenation, metabolism, and alkalinity, while strengthening your emotional, spiritual, and physical well-being. This is a mastermind with heart, accountability, connection, wisdom, and real support. Because your journey isn't just about surviving, it's about thriving. Join us by clicking on the Alkaline Collective Mastermind banner on the UK Health Radio homepage or directly at alkaline-collective.com, where self-belief grows, healing deepens, and transformation begins.
A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Wake up, dreamers! We're back and delighted to say today is super special because not only is our first returning guest here, the amazing Dr. Julia Mossbridge, but it's also the debut appearance of our Fantastic Four, who completed the Fantastic Four guest presenter, Alix Wilby. Alix, if you're new to her, she is former deputy editor of Hello Magazine, but more importantly than that now, she's a sound healer, journalist and all-round superstar. Alix, over to you. I'm throwing you really in at the deep end with Dr. Julia Mossbridge, but I know that you're going to love it.
Thank you, Teresa. And Julia, what a treat that I get to speak to you on my first show. It's so exciting. So I absolutely loved the telepathy tapes. And I just wanted to hear a bit from you about what the reaction was, because obviously it completely captured the imagination of everybody. For you being part of it, how was that?
It is still happening. It is still unfolding because I'm largely part of the film, the documentary that has yet to come out. It'll come out in the fall. And it has been just phenomenal. I mean, so Kai Dickens contacted me. She's the creator of the telepathy tapes, because she had heard about my work with extraordinary human experiences and thought, well, maybe, you know, we need someone who looks at things from the other side, from extraordinary human experience side rather than the autism side. And I said, absolutely, I'm fascinated with your show and I would love to, you know, meet some people. And then she introduced me to some folks and then, you know, she kind of backed off and said, go do your work. And she's not, you know, paying me or anything. But then I found donors who she pointed my way who would donate to Applied Love Labs, who did the work. To go try to do what we call mind discovery trials. So we're trying to change the way people interact with non-speaking autistic people. Instead of demanding that they prove that they're competent, we presume competence and we ask, what can we discover about your mind? And we ask them to spell on their letterboard or on their keyboards responses to questions about that tell us a little bit more about how their minds work. And in the meantime, we can understand things like, well, is there telepathy going on? But also more importantly, how is their mind different from the mind of the person who's holding the letterboard or is helping them regulate themselves as they communicate? Kai's team is amazing. What the change that she's trying to make in the world is a change that I have wanted to support for decades. And I think she's doing it. And I think this film is going to be big. And I'm incredibly excited for the changes that are coming related to what I call a love revolution. I talk about that in my book, The Love Revolution. It's this idea that we will start recognizing that the way towards productivity and health and success is actually experiencing unconditional love.
I wanted to ask you about unconditional love and time, because the first time that I've seen these concepts put together is in the book that you and Teresa wrote. So I did want to ask you a bit about that and the connection between them.
Yeah, there's some kind of connection between them that I for sure don't understand. And I've tried to do some work on it. So I did two papers where I looked at people and the team that I worked with, we looked at people's capacity to predict future events. Just sketch out for 2 minutes what you think will appear on a computer screen 2 minutes later. Just sketch it out, maybe put a few words down. You know, it's a hard task. We're asking you to predict the future. So just try it. That's basically the thing. And then we have independent judges who don't know what the randomly selected picture was that they were trying to sketch. And so they go and they say, what's the similarity between what they drew and these two pictures? And one's a dummy picture and one's the actual target. And so did that twice, and both times found that unconditional, that people, we had people rate themselves on how they're feeling in terms of unconditional love at the moment before they do the sketch. Both times, people who rate themselves as feeling largely unconditionally loving are significantly more likely to be able to predict that future picture. So that tells me a little bit, which is that unconditional love, that experience, is an experience of opening to what I call the informational substrate. This is the sort of the idea that there's this information that undergirds or supports or filters through everything. And with unconditional love opening, you have better access to that. It's almost like a key to that information. And I love that the key is unconditional love and not something like, I don't know, victory or hate. I mean, there's pretty, it seems like a really nice gift that the universe would give us, that the key to this is unconditional love. So I'm very excited to keep following up on that research.
Julia, I have to say, last night I had a dream, and in my dream, everything was going dark, and I was just thinking, everything is love, everything is love. And now I'm thinking, was this a premonition about our chat today? Because I've been obviously reading all about the premonitions and the precognition, but as you're speaking, that's just come to me. That feels quite crazy.
I have chills. Yeah. Well,
Oh.
everything is love. I mean, that's what it's all made of, right? And so it makes sense to me that so if space and time and the matter and energy in it are all made of love, I'm really interested in the physics of love. But if that's the case, then everything is love. And then there's a question of, okay, acknowledging that.
Yeah. I'm thinking what how far we're getting away from that in many places, you know. It's yeah, that's quite a reassuring thought to come back to, I think.
Yeah.
Julia.
Before we go, we're going to be going to an ad break in a second, but I just wanted to see if we could do something while we when we go to the ad break, because there's a war happening right now and there's need for love like never before. Is there some kind of a little experiment we can all do by sending love to the people, to ourselves, to the other people? What would you suggest we do, Julia?
Let's see. There's always so much going on that needs love, and so it's really wonderful to target that. I love the question. And so what comes into my mind is starting, I know this could sound selfish, but it's really not, is starting with yourself. So like making sure, like it's a two-step process, like imagining, like what if everyone right now, are we still on the air?
Yeah, we
Yeah.
are. We're about to go
Oh,
to a break, but we'll do
okay.
this practice while we're on the break.
Okay, good. So yeah, so here's the practice. Surround yourself with a bubble of unconditional love and keep filling it with light from the universe that's of whatever color makes you feel loving. And keep filling it up until you think that it can't be filled up anymore, and then you keep putting more in there. Like let the universe keep pouring more in there. It's none of your energy, it's the universe's energy. And then once it's so full that it's dripping over, it's overflowing, then expand that energy towards Iran, expand that energy towards Israel, expand that energy towards Pakistan, expand that energy towards wherever you feel you need to send that love.
Oh, I love
Julia,
that. So
thank
let's
you.
do
And
this.
Alex will be, thank you so much. It's just lovely to see you here. Julia, Kelly, thank you for reminding us of the difficult times we're in right now. Please fill yourselves up with unconditional love during this short break. Hold the dream. We'll see you on the other side.
The station that makes you feel good.
Imagine. Every day, clients walk into your office with their concerns about intimacy, identity, desire, and trauma. Questions that require more than basic training. Emotional and sexual dynamics are evolving, and today's professionals must evolve with them. We hear from parents unable to start conversations with their children around identity. Too often, adolescents have learned their sexual ideas from the internet. Couples have difficulty communicating about sex with each other. At the International Institute of Clinical Sexology, you can gain the specialized skills and knowledge to address those issues with confidence. Whether you are a therapist, coach, educator, or other healthcare professional, our advanced certifications and PhD program empower you to become a highly skilled, sought-after sex therapist. Expand your expertise. Elevate your earning potential. Start your journey today with the International Institute of Clinical Sexology. Imagine making a difference in our world. Learn more at clinicalsexologyphd.org.
Sarah wasn't bad at her job, she was stuck in hidden grief. After her dog died, she took a sales role just to stay busy, but every pitch felt empty. A Cogna Movement session uncovered that she was seeking the warmth of her dog rather than serving her clients. Using our patented movements and sensory patterns, she cleared the grief and rocketed to the top. What hidden emotion is holding you back? Try our Essentials program at the special UK Health Radio rate. Visit cognamovement.com/radio or click on the Cogna Movement banner on the UK Health Radio homepage. Results vary.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Wake up, dreamers. Welcome back. I hope your self-love bubble is just dripping and expansive all the way around the world. We're back in your dream time. I'm going to welcome into this out of the world, out of this world, out of this universe conversation, our two other wonderful guest presenters. We've got actor, author, and intuitive coach, Bill Webster, and journalist and TV producer, Margarita Mitchell. Margarita, ask the first question. I know you're just bursting with your self-love bubble to talk to Julia and then to you, Phil.
Thank you so much, Kelly. Julia, it's an honor to speak to you today. I would like to talk to you, and I hope I'm pronouncing this correctly, about Mayim Bialik and her show, hundreds and hundreds of thousands of views. And I believe you had the first live remote viewing exercise conducted live on her podcast recently. Can you tell us a little bit about that and how it went, and maybe come back and do one for us too at some point in the future?
It went really well. I mean, she's very intuitive. I knew it would go well because it came into my head to do it. So what happens often when I'm about to go do something is something will come into my head and I'll get very confident about it, mm-hmm. even though it might seem risky. And so I contacted her producer and I said, I want to do this thing. Can you buy a whiteboard? And she said, yeah, go. Okay, we'll do it. And so they bought a whiteboard. And so I asked her to stand up mm-hmm. and to divide the whiteboard in half. And on the right-hand side was where I asked her to put, this is standard remote viewing stuff, but mm-hmm. I asked her to put the analytical information, the date, the time, her name, her super secret code name, and any analysis or labels that she had about what was occurring to her. And then on the left side, put pictures, any descriptive words like adjectives or adverbs that were coming up. These are all things that I stole from basic remote viewing, but I was doing it in like a 3-minute format, you know? Mm-hmm. So I just took the essence of it. And the idea was she kind of didn't realize that she was actually doing this for a target in the future. So she was just like, okay, I'm just showing people how to remote view. So she just put things down. And then by the almost end of the show, I said, well, so we haven't picked a target for Mayim to look at, you know? And so, and they were like, what? Because they didn't realize. So we went, I asked Jonathan, her partner that does the show with her, you know, can you just look at your phone and then Mayim pick a number between 1 and 10 and look? And I asked Jonathan to look at the 7th, I think it was, picture on his phone. So it couldn't have been known ahead of time. And then the picture was of their dog playing with another dog. And Mayim had put these features down that seemed relevant, especially the sound. She was very keyed into the sound. But she was also keyed into this triangle pattern that kept appearing in the ways the dogs played. It was, and then at the same time, the dog, we realized later when editing the video, the dog came over only during that video, during the 2 hour recording. That's when she was doing the remote viewing of the dog and no one knew it was of the dog came over
The
and
dog
wanted to talk to me, like it just kept going like this. I'm like, okay, there's someone in this room who's a really good remote viewer, and it's the dog.
Doesn't surprise me. It doesn't surprise me. But Mayim does strike me as an intuitive person. I know her from Blossom, from when I was young. I grew up watching her, and I know that she's now a neuroscientist. The only person to ever play a neuroscientist on TV, actually.
Yes.
You've got a fantastic synergy between the two of you. Are you friends? Would you call yourself friends now?
That's funny. I feel like it, but she's so famous, and I'm so not good at noticing that about people that I said to her, "So can we be friends?" And she's like, "I think we can be friends." And so, yeah, I would say we're like friends, but I don't live there, so not very close. But we do really get along well because we're both neuroscientists and we both love to perform and talk to people, and we're both Jewish, and so we have this kind of mystical bent that we both have. I'm not saying every Jewish person is mystical, but we do. We both have this mystical bent, and we're both really curious about edge science. And so, yeah, I think she's like a national treasure for the US. I feel she's underappreciated, needs to be more appreciated.
Julia, you're talking about yourself there. You're a national treasure for the
Yes.
US as well. You
Oh, thank you.
truly, truly are. Thank you, Margarita. And Phil, our final guest presenter, please jump in before we run out of time. I know you have a question to ask Julia as well.
Thanks. Thank you, Teresa. And yeah, hi, Julia. I want to share a personal experience with you, and I'm gonna get through it quickly because I can make it be really long-winded. So
Okay.
I had an experience in my mid-30s where linear time fell away, and all I could experience was the moment of now, and it terrified me, and it went on for like a year, the better part of a year. And conventional doctors, they diagnosed it as psychosis. And it wasn't until I found someone who was very well versed in deeper ideas, and he presented it as an awakening, or to even ultimate reality, or my ultimate reality. And I've heard that you've suggested that our brains act as filters to provide a kind of sane physical experience by blocking out non-local information. So, do you think that we might currently be at a turning point, like, and the general consensus seems like so much more open now, where we're kind of beginning to unfilter our consciousness, and the general consensus is starting to be more sort of open to alternative ideas?
I think we definitely are at a turning point. I think telepathy tapes has been part of that, but telepathy tapes found roots because of that. And I think that now, if that experience happened to you today, there would be more people educated to say this might be a spirit, what's called a spiritual emergency, rather than psychosis. But also, people are starting to recognize that mental illness has to do with the person who's experiencing it having a problem with what they're experiencing. So it doesn't have to do with my interpretation of reality is different than yours, but I'm actually fine and t fully functional in my life. Like, that's not the same as mental illness. So, we all know people who, are functioning fine in their lives. In fact, they may be functioning really well and be really very happy, who believe something that we feel is outlandish.
Yeah,
So mental illness
absolutely.
is not about belief, right?
Yeah,
Sorry.
I mean, for me, they just threw, sleeping pills at me, and kind of anti-anxiety pills and things like
They
that, which
tried to
didn't
drug
touch
it out
it.
of you.
Yeah, and as soon as I met this guy, and he basically took me through a very standard grounding meditation, which I'd never done before, and instantly I was like, okay, after months of really feeling like I was barely hanging on to reality. And it made all the difference, yeah. And I feel that with hindsight, that probably sent me down this path that I'm on now. But just at the time, I was just kind of glad to put it behind me,
Yeah, if you were having a hard time with it, then the grounding piece is really so it's all about, are you having a hard time with what's happening to you, regardless of whether it's some amazing spiritual awakening or psychosis? If you're having a hard time with it, then you have to meet someone who has the tools like this man did to do the grounding. And I wonder, and I don't know if I have no idea if this is true, but I wonder if the grounding exercise he did was a way also of engaging your, left frontal filter that would say, okay, now we're going to work, like all that stuff is interesting and true and wild and cool, and we're going to work through that in time. But right now, we're going to be in this body and we're going to deal with, the rent coming due and all the other things.
That was exactly it. He just brought me back to, my story and what have you, because I was, God knows where I was.
Well, but you might have been experiencing the sort of your future life in a big condensed way, like all the insights that would come, but in a way that was dysregulating for you. And so maybe now you can slowly go through those insights in a way where you're much more regulated and it's much more pleasant and helpful to you.
Yeah, no, for sure. With hindsight as well, it makes kind of perfect sense that I went through that with the work that I'm doing now. And I very much bring that into my own practices with clients and what have you about connecting with the moment of now, and that's where everything is, essentially.
And
Thank
in
you.
fact, thank you for saying that, because in fact, when people say, how can I get more precognitive? How can I have better intuition? I say, be present in the now. It's all in the now. It's not like you have to go somewhere else. It's like have an address that's in your body right here and right now. Plant a flag in the right here and right now. And so that any information can come, knows where to go to come to you. If you're out floating around, the information does not know where to go.
Absolutely. Well,
Thank
yeah, thanks, Julia.
Thank you, Phil. And I can see in the chat, Amy, are you still here? Is Amy still here?
Yeah, I'm
Amy is
here.
still
Yeah,
here.
you had a question as well, which kind of relates to this discussion that Phil and Julia had. So I know you have to rush off for a client soon. So if you
I'm okay. I'm okay for a little bit. So, I mean, I have so much too to say, Julia, in terms of what you're talking about, and Phil as well, and I can get to my question as well. But I think this is so many therapists are not trained in these experiences to understand what they are, and so there's immediate dismissal to, oh my gosh, is this some sort of psychotic break, rather than viewing it as either a spiritual emergence, which can look like a spiritual emergency. And how to bring someone back into that place of allowing it to be an emergence, and helping them through that. And so, Julia, this sort of dovetails with my question about the work of Al Powers. Are you familiar with his work out of Yale, looking at the minds of schizophrenics and the minds of mediums, and seeing if perhaps what is actually happening is just the filtering process? And so they're just getting so much more information than. And they don't know how to filter it, and how that might change how we think about particularly that diagnosis.
Yeah, and I think you could also say if your right hemisphere is really, really active, that would also be anyone who has that experience is very similar. So in other words, the two hemispheres kind of inhibit each other. And so if your left hemisphere inhibits the right hemisphere, there's some data out of Baycrest University in Canada that your left hemisphere does a good job of inhibiting psychic ability in the right hemisphere. If your left hemisphere is not active, not only do you have trouble sort of surviving in the world, but also it's like you have opened up the filter. And so, yes, I think that's very interesting. But I sometimes think people will take away from that this sort of message that, and therefore, we should all strive to be schizophrenic. And so, no, but I mean, people do have these thoughts, right? And so, what I want to say is, again, this is literally what Phil just brought up, but I'm just going to say it again. Our brains and bodies evolved this way to reduce the information that's coming in for a reason. It doesn't mean that we can't open up to more information. It means that if we need to do it in a grounded way. Or else it is really unpleasant and hard to live in this world in these bodies. And
And
so,
dangerous.
and dangerous. And so, I have a sister who struggles with mental illness. She also feels that she's getting more information, and she is. She's definitely very psychic when she's in a psychotic state. But also, it's also really hard on her. And it's really hard on everyone around her, but also especially her. And so, this is not. We, as a culture, and this happens also with non-speakers, people can start to revere certain brain types as like, oh, that's the oracle brain type. Like,
Oh.
you know, You're an oracle. You're not schizophrenic. Or like, no, maybe you're schizophrenic and you're an oracle. Like these two things
And
can,
both.
right?
And
And so
both,
you want to might
right.
want to get treatment because being in a psychotic state is really bad for your brain. It can train your brain to be more psychotic, right? So you want to get treatment, whatever that treatment is that works for you. But at the same time, societally, if we could respect
That's it.
People regardless of their brain type, that would be helpful too. So
Thank you.
this is where unconditional love comes in again. So unconditional love literally means, like, I didn't even define it, but it literally means placing no conditions on whether you give or receive love.
This is
So,
so
right?
important. Oh my heavens. This is the center. This is the tent pole of the whole thing. And for anybody who can see the video, I've got Julia's book cover on my Zoom screen, and it looks like I've got little eyes poking out of the back of my head. Have a nice disclosure. I'm having a background in 12 steps. There's a saying, "You're as sick as your secrets." And there's so much more I want to unpack with you about the power of having written this very amazing book. Have a nice disclosure. But I know Teresa has a few surprises up her sleeves. And I know that we're probably wondering if you're precogging any of what's about to come. So, Teresa, what's up
They
your
may
sleeve?
not
You're
be. They may
sneaky.
not be. I was going to ask you because we recently had as a guest Dr. Arnold Delorme on UK Health Radio, and he said he was working with you currently on an exciting research project. Can you tell us about that?
Oh, Arno and I are part of it's cool that you bring up Arno. So he and I are part of this team working with iConscious, which is, if you go to iConscious online, you'll see the amazing work that they're doing over there. So they have an understanding of, I believe it's 10 levels of, I'm more on the AI side, but I believe it's 10 levels of consciousness. And they're not judgy levels, like you should be at level 10 and you're only at a level one. It's more like an observation about the kind of changes that people go through as they start to discover how they are in the world and what their relationship is with others and love and things. And we're finding a way on this team to bring that into AI to assess people's capacity for awareness by their interactions with AI. And so we're working with Applied Love Labs. We're working with Institute of Noetic Sciences. Arno's on the team. We're working with Google X, and we're working with iConscious. And so it's like a multi-organizational project, and it's really exciting.
Oh, Arno was actually going to drop in. Actually, he was a surprise guest, but there's technical difficulties, so it's such a shame because he was going to come and talk to us because he had such fun last time.
I have a quick question. Can I jump in about this, about the AI aspect? I mean, it seems like at least 10 times a day I'm having a conversation with somebody who either is very much in the know or very, very excited or very terrified about AI. And even with regards to dream work, so many people are going straight to AI to interpret their dreams. And it seems like there's two paths. I mean, there's billions of unlimited paths that we could take to the future. But I have a feeling that having some sense of unconditional love that we project even onto AI could help us possibly step into that timeline that is more positive. What would you say about unconditional love meets AI in the minute before we have a, or I don't know, a quick question. I'm not sure if we have a break coming up, but take it away, Julia.
One of my favorite projects of my lifetime is the Loving AI project, where I, oh, wait a minute. I think,
Okay.
hold on. People are
Hold
coming into
on.
the room who I
What's
know.
this?
It's
What
like
is
a
this?
party.
Oh, goodness, best laid plans.
These are like some
Oh,
of my
this is.
favorite people. We literally
I
have
know.
three of my favorite people
Kelly
who just
Kelly
came
was
into the
one who
room.
said, "This is turning into a Julia. This is your life." These people are
Your
so
life, this is
busy
your
trying to
life.
get these megastars together just to celebrate you, Julia, and say hi. Who is in? Because I can.
I mean, here's Dean Radin, Arno
Yes.
Delorme, and Adam Rizvi. I mean, these people are, you guys, thanks for being here. I don't know why
Oh
Teresa's
no.
doing this. I feel like it's my
Queen.
birthday, and it's not my birthday. It
Yes,
was her
this is
birthday
for
last week.
you. It's Julia's boys. They are here. But Dean, I'm so excited Dean's here because we are actually going to announce we're going to do a show on July the 1st with Dean, Helena, Garrett, and Arno to celebrate the work of Iron. So thank you, Dean. Arno has been a guest, of course, as has Adam. But anyway, I'm going to let you just chat now and leave it to you, Julia and her boys.
These are not my boys. These are amazing, powerful men who have defined the field of spirituality, psi, and human capacities. These are special people. Wonderful to see you. How are you all doing?
Who wants to
Hey,
speak?
Julia. Does the
Hey,
future
Adam.
look bright? Is the future bright, or is it? Yeah, tell us about the future
Adam.
with regards to AI and dreams and
I
your
will just tell
pod.
you very quickly because I want to chat with these three. AI is what you put into it. So how are we going to be with AI? If we're going to be loving with AI and expect love from AI, then that's what's going to
Oh,
happen.
Julia, can you precog the fourth and final surprise for you today before we let them in?
Lloyd Auerbach. I didn't precog it. I looked at the screen, but
Just a bit of your
Lloyd.
mind. That counts.
Oh,
Lloyd,
this is Professor Paranormal, who we are
Hey,
trying to
Julia.
pin down, but he won't get up
Hey, Frank.
early,
All right,
and that's a lie.
I have a question for all four of our guests, and because there's not much time, maybe like the answer is like think of like three words or one sentence to answer this question. You guys are all wonderful people who have been extremely supportive of me and my work, and I have really enjoyed working with all of you. So my question to you is, what is the next step for humanity? Okay, go, Adam Risby.
He's
I would
thinking.
say, oh, that's really hard. I would say compassionate service to Earth.
Okay, excellent. Lloyd Auerbach, what is the next step for humanity?
I mean, I want to say to infinity and beyond, but I don't want to quote Galaxy Quest.
I
I'd
want you to
say,
quote Galaxy Quest.
okay, that's it. To infinity and beyond with empathy.
Fantastic. Okay, great. Arnaud Delorme. What is the next step for humanity?
I would say, look within.
Inner space. Excellent. Dean Radin, last word. What is the next step for humanity?
Eating less sugar.
Oh, I think that's also really true. It's so helpful for all the things. That's fantastic. And also perfect for one of my favorite things. When I first met Dean, I was a graduate student at Northwestern, and I took the risk of contacting him because I used to do that all the time with people, scientists that I revered, and I would just call them up at whatever number I found, and he actually answered the phone. Remember, Dean, and we talked about, you told me if I wanted to get involved in the world of psychic research, that it was a long road and I should get a degree in something else first. Do you remember that conversation?
Vaguely.
You've done that with a lot of people.
I've had literally thousands of such conversations with people, and you're one of the very few who followed through. So
Yeah.
congratulations on that.
Well, congratulations on your awesome work for your entire life, and thanks for being such a great mentor. So,
Julia, how would you answer that question?
what's next for
As
humanity?
I,
Everything
yeah.
everyone said, plus I would say the love revolution. Yeah,
And less sugar.
which includes eating less sugar. It includes to infinity and beyond with empathy, compassionate service, and includes Arno. What was yours again?
Look within.
Look within.
Ah,
It's the
yes.
biggie. That's
Inner
the biggie.
space.
Change
Well, inner
yourself before you
space.
change the world.
And if we're sweet to ourselves, we don't need to eat so much sugar.
Oh,
So
I love the synthesis there.
I
That's
like
Kelly.
that. Oh, I
Kelly, well
like that.
done. Oh
So
my
when you're
goodness.
looking for sugar, when you're craving sugar, say, okay, what can I do that's sweet for me? Ooh.
Oh, looking for love in all the wrong places, but we'll look within now.
Maybe when you're looking for sugar, you go, okay, my future self has a gift for me right now of sweetness. What is that? And then you like attune into your future self. I think that could be a powerful move. Anyway, I
Julia.
speaking of that, I have this one website I'd like to share. Applied Love Labs, which used to be the Institute for Love and Time, now is Applied Love Labs, is partnering with these two young people who I think of as young people. They're in their 20s, who created a product called uselunchbox.com. You know how you would write, your mom would write a little note in your lunchbox, right? So it's a little note to yourself from your future self. And ALL, Applied Love Labs, we're partnering with uselunchbox.com to try to get people, because we know that it actually helps people to interact with their future self with unconditional love. They're giving us half their proceeds if you write yourself a little note, and I think it costs like $3 or something, and then it randomly delivers it to you at some time in the future. They're giving Applied Love Labs half the proceeds. So I wanted to put that out there for people to try it, because that could be a little way to give a little sweet message to yourself in a way that's actually been validated clinically.
That future forward note. Wow, kids.
Yeah, wow. Wow is right. What a mind expanding show. I'm in tears, and I feel this show touches me. I'm, as kind of a spiritual woo woo person.
No, we never think of that, Calic.
I don't think I need science to back up what I know, but it's so nice to have to be in this conversation where science meets woo woo. This has been so expanding, bringing dreamers and scientists and visionaries colliding. Teresa, I can't believe
you've done a whole new reality. Professor Arnold Delorme, Professor Dean Radin, Dr. Adam Ridsvy, Lloyd Auerbach, Professor Paranormal, Dr. Julia Mossbridge, my fantastic four team of wonderful guest presenters. Of course, Kelly, my wonderful co-host. We've traveled through time, explored the future, and tapped into the infinite power of the dreaming mind.
And to all you dreamers listening, thank you for dreaming bigger and loving more with us every single week.
A massive heartfelt thank you to our recurring dream and my dear friend. I hope I can call you a friend, Julia Mossbridge.
Of course.
And we're going to play out your favorite movie score. We're going to play out from Arrival, because you once told me, I mean, that may have changed, that you loved Arrival. Would you do us the honor of signing off the show and tell us why this film speaks to you?
Oh, I mean, woman scientist saves the world with unconditional love and time travel. Yes.
Take it away, Johan.